All right, we had Sean with us today, Joe, and he's announcing his presidency of the Ethereum Rest in Peace Foundation.
Nice.
With his new his new profile picture. So, Sean, you think Ethereum's dead?
I live in hope, man. I live in hope. I do. I mean, from a kind of a chartist standpoint, I think it's fucked.
Interesting.
We can look at it. I mean, obviously, I have a bias. I mean, I'm self-declared bias. I think from a charting point of view, it's doing what shitcoins do, which is, you know, underperformed last bull market. Looks to me like it's in real trouble. From the point of view of relative to my beloved Bitcoin, but let's see. Things only history tells the tale. Yeah,
you brought up a good point that you still in our community at t.me/missiondefi, and you brought up the point that you actually are still very concerned about some level of dump from Bitcoin. You still believe that's going to happen. And then your thoughts on this actually make a lot of sense that, you know, if Bitcoin dumps at a severe level, that the already down altcoin world is probably going to have a more extreme and more painful experience from that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd marked some, all joking aside, I'd marked some kind of areas of interest on some shitcoins and, particularly Kanto, which I kind of think is a cute project. And it's kind of hit my buy zone as of a couple of hours ago. But again, when I say buy, I'm talking about doing, a 3 to 6 month buy. I don't mean going clicking a button and, throwing
everything
at it, like doing a time weighted entry. But my concern is what happens to the altcoin market if Bitcoin does what I expect it to do. That there could, now again, I can be wrong on that. I'm okay being wrong with it. I don't think I am. I think the signs are still negative from the way I look at the market. Happy to be wrong. But if I am right, I think that we could see some serious demolition of value in the altcoin. I mean, I still, get some controversial and like me. I mean, I still don't think there's a snowball's hell and chance we escape this bear market without printing Bitcoin sub 10K.
Just without what?
Without printing sub 10K on Bitcoin. That's still okay. My view.
Right.
If I'm right on that thesis, I don't know what happens to projects, like Kanto and so on and so on. But just on the basics, if you believe there's going to be a recession, which I do, I'm not sure I want to be that long risk assets into a recession.
Right.
Nothing has really happened to kind of change my market view since it's been a couple of weeks since I bored people with my bearishness. nothing's happened. We're literally just chopping this, 25 to 30K zone. Money's still leaving the ecosystem, whales still distributing on exchange. I have no reason to be bullish. That doesn't preclude a little bit more up movement, but I'm 100%, 99% convinced we ain't seen the market bottom. It's my view, not financial advice.
Sure. Well, Sean, I think it's interesting that when you say recession, I mean, are you talking global? Are you talking US? Are you talking about Europe? And then also we talk crypto and then alts and all of that. I think, one of the things I complained to everybody else about is not, and to TradeFi people, is not being able to break it down. Like when they say crypto, they're lumping Bitcoin in with, shitcoin number, 40,000 or something. It's all one thing to them. And I think we talk macro, it's sort of similar because we all, talk about global economy slowing, but it seems like it's a little bit different in different areas. So just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that in regards to the sub 10K potential move.
Well,
albeit brief.
if we look at Bitcoin, you know, it's a risk asset. We have seen TradFi players disembark. That you can see that. I mean, it's obvious in the charts. I think that historically, the reason I'm kind of bearish on the global economy is fairly sledgehammer. And that is the history of the Fed is they hike till they break something. They've never done anything like this without breaking something. That doesn't mean today or tomorrow, but you know, every time they break something. So people get bullish on price moving up, and you know, there's a nice rally both in Bitcoin and in TradFi, and that's fine. I'm a non-believer. I'm not a buyer of anything at this price. If I'm wrong, you know, again, I don't really worry about being. I mean, you know, if you're a trader or an investor, you know, the first question you ask about everything is am I okay if I'm wrong? Yeah. Well, that's what I do. And if you're not doing that, I think it's a question. So I'm okay with being wrong, but I am convinced I'm not. I think that if we look at our own space, I don't think anybody has a real idea of how much unexpressed risk is still out there, just on kind of more fundamentals between, you know, Binance, the Mt. Gox coins are still to be distributed. We see companies like Prime Trust going under. Nobody knows how deep their fingers went into the ecosystem. We see this nonsense with TUSD. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Now, that said, we have some positive medium-term news, which is spot ETFs. And as the narrative on which I fucking love. I love the narratives on crypto Twitter is, you know, BlackRock is going to come and steal your coins. BlackRock couldn't give a shit. BlackRock want to make fees off people trading.
Okay? Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
They're not here to lock it up. What good does it do them to lock it up?
They're here for the VIG, basically.
Yeah, they're the guys running the poker room. They don't give a shit who they loses. They get a rake. Yeah. So, you know, and also I do think they've done one very smart thing, which, you know, I do think they'll get it, and that's not because I'm some grand conspiracy theorist. I think that if you're reasonable and you look at the reasons for the rejection, and also some of the allegations made against my good friend CZ, the fundamental reason for rejection in the past has simply been that there is no spot market with surveillance. I.e., you can't trust the spot markets in crypto. And to be honest, anybody who is engaged in this business at a level of detail, you know, knows about wash trading. They know about all the bullshit that's going on. And what the BlackRock proposal does with this surveillance between Coinbase and NASDAQ is actually very smart. So I think they take off the fundamental issue that the SEC had with the spot ETF, and they have the brand recognition, and all of a sudden everybody's piling in going, oh shit, yeah, that's great. Why didn't you think of that? Because, you know, as much as we, you know, want to hate on these guys, and I am no lover of these people, to be clear, yeah? Okay. That doesn't mean that everything they say is a lie or some kind of method to steal our money. The SEC's objection has historically always been an unfair spot market. And they've been absolutely fucking right, okay?
Yeah.
Right.
And what BlackRock have done is proposed a referencing fair spot markets. Now, I personally believe that they can tick that box. I personally believe that's absolute nonsense that it'll be fair, because everything will always reference to the most liquid spot exchange, which is Binance, which is clearly a fugazi. I mean, it's just ridiculous, yeah? You know, so there'll be a second order effect that Binance and CZ still set the price, or their exchanges set the price. But look, fair play to them. And you know, fundamentally, a spot ETF for Bitcoin is uber bullish in the longer term. Yeah, it takes off the table so many things. There's going to be so much influential money that has Bitcoin exposure. It takes off the let's ban Bitcoin, you know, possibility, slim as it may be, in the US. And it engages TradFi, it engages pension money, and so on. So it is absolutely bullish news. It's just a question of time frame. Yeah, it's
yeah.
Like, I'm always bullish Bitcoin, but you know, I do not believe that a spot ETF will change any of the dynamics for the rest of this year, personal opinion.
I think what also makes it work too, Sean, is that, you know, BlackRock's, you know, AUM, you know, TradeFi equivalent of TVL is about $8.5 trillion. Yep. So, you know, they've got like 15x coverage over like the entire Bitcoin market cap, you know, close somewhere around there, plus or minus a couple points. And I think that's got to give the Feds a little comfort zone too. You know, with all of a sudden you've got all that backing then of what they're, I guess, custodying or holding or whatever they're going to do with it. Whereas most of the other vehicles we saw, you know, that would try to do similar things. Let's think about, you know, the Celsius's of the world, you know, nowhere near that level of backstop. And, yeah, you know, BlackRock's already under surveillance by the U.S., you know, in the regulatory regime of the U.S. government. So,
yeah, like I think they'll get it. I think they'll get it for the right reasons in terms of a filing, yeah? Not some grand conspiracy. Yeah. Because I think they address the issues that have existed with previous spot ETFs.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Doesn't mean I like them. Doesn't mean I'm going for beer with them. I'm just saying, let's be slightly rational about this and going, this is simply the best spot ETF filing we've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
And the expectation I heard yesterday from somebody is that, you know, we could see it in like 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's 45 days from submission, business days, I presume, and so on and so on. And again, look, the truth of the last bull market, which people don't want to acknowledge, is that it was primarily driven by the GBTC arbitrage trade, yeah? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got a huge amount of TradFi spot buying based on the differential between GBTC and Bitcoin. And I think we went through the charts before. And as soon as that arbitrage trade died, okay, the market had topped. So, you know, in terms of is this mean an immediate bull run? I would think you have to look at it. You have to look at the volume. You have to look at, is there a reason? Is there an arb to be had? Is it the arb in the right direction? But look, it's positive. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I think it's a very positive move for the price of Bitcoin. And hey, I'm a Bitcoiner. I'm okay with the price going up. But
yeah,
do you think it's enough to pull it out of the? Do you think it's enough to keep it from having what, you know, the down that you're expecting?
Personally, no, and I can tell you why. Because, you know, again, one of my main, other than silly lines on charts, one of my main kind of ways of trying to determine whether the market is in a bullish stance or a bearish stance is just to look at money flow, go, well, is there anybody front running this? And to me, absolutely not, yeah. Right. Like, you know, I would expect to see the fingerprints of accumulation. And there is no accumulation. We're still distributing fiat, still leaving on exchange smart money, if we want to call it smart money or large money anyway, is still distributing into retail FOMO. So if we take the view that smart money has a, you know, has a better view of the future price out for the next 3 to 4 months, they're bearish. So I have no reason to be bullish.
A quick question. I mean, I kind of feel like there's, you know, and I know narrative can be used in, you know, positive and negative ways, or let's say a thesis here that, and I know that you've discounted this, the halvening effect in the past in our discussions, but, you know, if the market thinks it's going to do it and, you know, that market sentiment, regardless of having any knowledge of why or it should or shouldn't, and you pile that on top of, say, spot ETF, you know, market news and narrative, I mean, it starts to feel like to me that there's a couple of major issues here that could drive us into an upward cycle sooner rather than later. I mean, what do you think about that, Sean? And you too, Brad.
Well, I'll give you my view. I think people who trade sentiment are fucking idiots. any clearer than that? Price leads sentiment, not the other way around, okay?
True.
Again, we, you know, I've given my view on you know, and again, I was going to discuss a little bit why I think the halfling is a busted flush. That, you know, and maybe explain what the halfling is and why it has had an effect and why it shouldn't anymore. But I don't care about sentiment. I mean, sentiment, you know, price goes up. Like a couple of weeks ago, we were at 25K and sentiment was bearish. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now we're at 30K, sentiment is bullish. I mean, that's what sentiment is. It's a reflection of not just the price, but how we got there. So price leads sentiment. I could care less about it.
Yeah, I mean, but the herd of the market, yeah, kind of, I think he's hit on the same thing. But Brad, I was curious, what do you think?
I can't, I mean, it's impossible to argue with that point of view. It is like, you know,
which one?
Well, how do you argue with the idea that price drives sentiment? I mean, I can't see any other way to see it.
Well,
right?
Because most people aren't rational. Most people aren't making decisions rationally. That's the point.
Right, but the people that really control price, the large players, are much more rational than the retail players. And I really buy into Sean's point that he's made before that retail is irrelevant for the most part, for what happens with the overall market and price. So that's, I mean, you know, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid over here. So,
well, I mean, I think we have data to support that. I mean, you can go through the MI stuff and you look at retail buying and selling and, you know, it's almost always wrong. Yeah.
Right.
There are cases where retail have been extraordinarily right. And on, you know, down the shitcoin list, or in TradFi, we have, you know, the GameStop and AMC, but there's no history with respect to Bitcoin of retail trading being right. And there should be no expectation. And typically we see large money, you know, and again, this is a horrible thing, but we see, you know, there's a couple of statistics that just say why you shouldn't give a shit about retail. And number one is 99% of crypto traders lose money. 99%. Okay, so retail clearly is not their mood, their everything else is not relevant. It may become relevant one day, but historically it hasn't been. And they tend to act as exit liquidity. Thank you.
Right. Well, that's across, you know, that's all, that's TradFi too for the most part. But they do tend to, you know, the herd effect tends to come piling in. I'm kind of curious then what drove the price up, you know, during the previous halvenings, and why did the halvening become even a story at all, an event? That what's pushing that up in the past?
Because there was an actual case, and again, like we can go, like it's really simple to look at this. Like the last bull market was driven by.
Do you want to share a screen or anything, Sean?
Yeah, it's up there, man. Have you? Okay.
Go ahead.
So, like, first of all, just for those. No. So this is, you know, a plot of the blue line is Bitcoins in circulation, okay? Right. And the orange line is the effect of the halving on monetary inflation of Bitcoin, okay? So you can see that we started with, you know, almost infinite inflation at the beginning because there was nothing issued. And what the halving is, for people who don't know, is that every 10 minutes, new coins are paid to miners as a reward for the effort they put in. Okay, so you know, every 10 minutes is a block, and every 4 years, the number of coins issued as a block reward is halved, literally halved. Yeah, so what you have is basic supply demand dynamics. So at the very beginning, okay, the amount of new coin coming in relative to the amount of coin available was huge. Yeah, we had inflation at, you know, thousands of percent. Okay. Yep. So when you halved that, okay, the effect of that supply increasing, supply reduction was absolutely dramatic. Okay. So you effectively instantaneously reduced the sell pressure on the market. Okay. And the next halvening, you can see again, we had the same effect, obviously to a lower, you know, we're now looking at inflation being, you know, probably 8 or 9%, but into coins issued of 15 million. So the reduction in new coin supply is ever growing, tending towards zero. Okay. So this is a real kind of supply demand issue, is that, you know, at the very beginning, the effect of halving the supply into a market with very few number of coins dramatically decreased the sell pressure, hence price goes up and it goes on. But it's an ever decreasing to zero game. Yeah. Because you know, currently we produce 900 new coins a day, just to put that. So that'll go next year to 450 new coins a day. That's into a circulating supply of 19 million. Okay, so the supply-demand effect is basically tending to zero. It's a non-event. So if you believe the halving will have a continued effect, then the only thing you can tie it to is sentiment. Yeah, or it's always happens, therefore it will happen. I don't look at that. I tend to go that actually, if you look at credit cycles, which match perfectly with Bitcoin halvenings, it makes a lot, outside of the first couple, it makes a lot more sense to go that as a risk asset, availability of credit is really what affects the cycles. And they just happen to happen at kind of exactly the same coincidental coincidental regime. So you see these kind of, you know, rises and falls in credit impulses. And that makes a lot more sense to me. And so you go, okay, they happen in four-year cycles, as you can see on the chart. So if there's another four-year cycle next year, then sure, I can see the halvening effect or whatever one, you know, the four-year cycle is probably a better name for it, repeating. Yeah.
Right.
I just don't think that we're going to see a credit impulse next year. So you think
it's more about the fact that people were borrowing and buying Bitcoin because there was easy availability of credit that kind of moved price up coincidentally at the same time that, you know, halvening. So yeah, so some sentiment had to be playing in there to trigger those buys, it sounds like.
Cheap money, man. If there's loads of cheap money, you pump it into risk assets. Always be
true.
Way.
And now there's not going to be that. So that's a good point.
Yeah. So I think at a fundamental supply-demand side of it, I mean, the halvening is clearly irrelevant now. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the basic theory behind the reduction in new supply relative to the supply, which you see in the inflation chart, okay, then it's very clear that, you know, we've gone from massive inflation. So it's an ever deflationary asset, or should I say the amount of inflation is always tending towards zero, which if you take that just as a supply demand dynamic, okay, or a supply dynamic, that means the effect of the halvening is also tending to zero.
You can definitely see its impact obviously going down. Yeah. So whereas in the early years, like you said, because of the credit and everything else, you know, the impact was a lot greater because the supply was smaller and the effects on it were more dramatic. So, you know, whereas now it's not even remotely linked with that credit cycle. So odds are not likely to happen.
Yeah. So if you take the concept of the halvening as, you know, or the effect of, you know, the halvening thing, the reality of the halvening as being the driver for the bull cycles made a lot of sense the first cycle, just because of the amount of coins in issue. But let's put this into some perspective. You know, at the time we were, you know, 1,000, somewhere between 100 and 1,000% inflation. Okay. Mm-hmm. As inflation, like on the next halving, you know, we're going to be sub 1% inflation.
Right.
So, you know, this idea that we should, if we did believe this was the driver, we would expect to see a huge, you know, reduction in the bull run. You know, the level of the bull runs would be declining at an exponential rate. We would never have gone to 69. We might have gone to 25. And next time we go to 26 and so on. But that's clearly not the driver for this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
No, don't get me wrong. I think that when you know, look, you know, all you need to see is the availability of vast availability of cheap money, yeah? And then risk assets go to the moon, and I've no doubt Bitcoin will lead the way. So I'm not bearish, but I'm going, you know, am I, you know, counting down to block whatever it is and go, that's when the bull market starts? Absolutely not. I'm not. I think that the effect of the halving, and again, I don't believe in retail sentiment or any of that, is non-existent. I think that we're into the effect of you know, as all risk assets are, into the effect of, you know, the supply and demand of credit, cheap credit.
Makes sense. I mean, that's what drives the private equity markets too. Yeah. I mean,
everything. All
yeah. I just never really thought of it that directly correlating, but it makes total sense.
It absolutely does. Yeah. I mean, now you can also argue that it's the US presidential cycles just happen to coincide as well. And,
yeah.
And lots of things happened on 4-year cycles, you know. But if we're interested in the things and the monetary ones, I think this is probably a far more important chart with respect to the last halving and the halving after this one, i.e., If you believe there's going to be no credit impulse, then I think that you should be very cautious about the halving narrative.
Yeah, makes total sense.
I don't know if there's going to be a massive credit impulse. There will always be a credit impulse at some point.
Right.
Again, historically, okay, we need to break something first. So, you know, that's what happens every time the Fed is hiked, okay, something breaks. Then they come in with their bazooka of liquidity and they fix it. Okay. And I've no reason to believe that this time is going to be any different whatsoever.
No, it won't. It'll just be more money. You know, do whatever it takes. They'll do whatever it takes. You know, so
all you need to hear is Jay Powell stand up and use those famous words, "We'll do whatever it takes," and just fucking long everything. Yeah. It's a very, very simple business in that way, and up to then. So again, I don't know when they break something. I think it's probably Q4, Q1 next year. I think the market could drop. I think when they break something, we get and everything goes to one trade, and I think that's the bottom. And then I'll be closing my shorts and getting out. And I could easily be wrong. Whether that's timed with the halving or not, I'm not taking the date of the halving as being significant anymore. That's my point.
It's a one-off event in your mind. You're not using it to influence, say, the other drivers of price. Got it.
I'd be looking at liquidity. All markets are liquidity. And, you know, on that note, if we look at, I've kind of done a bit more into liquidity here, crypto liquidity. So, what it did here is, so you got orange, I've corrected it, is Bitcoin price, as it should be, being orange. And blue is total market liquidity. And then I've broken it down into the three fiat redeemable stable coins, yeah?
Yeah.
So there's some interesting things. So the top one is USDC, middle one is USDT, and the bottom one is this nasty little thing called TUSD. Okay. So to put these in relative size, USDC is 28 billion, USDT is 83 billion, and there's little TUSD at 3 billion. But there are some interesting things happening. So first of all, we can see the liquidity swap. So people are going, look, USDT is printing. Yeah, absolutely it is, yes. But what you're actually seeing, or what you actually saw, was a liquidity swap from USDC to USDT, almost certainly because of the banking problems that USDC had, but net still going down. And then we have this nasty little thing down here, which is the only one that has increasing supply, which strangely they printed $1 billion twice, which just happened to mark these pumps. So you can see that Justin Sun's coin, he claims it isn't, but it's almost certainly Justin Sun's coin, printed $1 billion, pumps the market, yeah.
Yeah.
Print billion, pump the market. So again, this narrative, beautiful time to do it, this narrative of BlackRock, you know, is coming to steal your coins and blah, blah, blah. Well, no, what actually happened, again, why liquidity is important to markets, is because you can see somebody printed up $1 billion of TUSD, because if you're a rational person with $1 billion, you send it to the smallest market cap company who have had their custodian go into liquidation and apparently cannot mint or redeem any of your fiat, but you send them $1 billion anyway because you're a trusting kind of guy. Okay.
A billion worth of Tron.
they give you this, and surprisingly, at the same time, CZ decides zero fees on TUSD trading and you pump the market. So there you go. That's, you know, so again, impact of liquidity is very, very easy. So this thing that's less than 1% is, and I'm calling foul on this, I'm not going to mince my words, this is an utter fucking scam. Yeah. There is no $1 billion. There never was. These guys, TUSD, have lied through their teeth about this. That's verifiable. And all that you're seeing here is some kind of exit game. And, you know, you have to implicate CZ in it as well, because, you know, why is he making this the only pair with zero fees, encouraging retail to play? You know, bloody, bloody, bloody. So again, but back to the fundamental point, if we take out this nonsense down here, is liquidity leaves doesn't mean an immediate impact on market, okay, but it's just bearish. All markets are liquidity, all, okay? And again, just to one other point I just wanted to kind of bring up as well, which is to look at, are the institutions back? Because it's very, we can really see here where these guys left. Let me just bring up, so let's just compare this to the NASDAQ and put this on a different scale. And we currently have negative correlation with TradFi, yeah? So I'm going to put this on weekly. Sorry, guys. Stick with me. So you can see this was announced. The market makers left the game, yeah? Okay, and we decorrelated. You can see perfect correlation, okay, directional correlation. Then all of a sudden, NASDAQ is pumping. We're going down. This is coming down. We pumped. So, you know, again, that's just a sign of traditional liquidity leaving the space, and no sign of it coming back at all. So, again, I'm not precluding that this can't run higher. My point is that on any data-driven metric, on anything that matters to markets, which is liquidity and risk and so on, like, I'm just not a buyer here. I mean, I can't be, you know, I can't do anything here other than protect the stack that I have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm not a buyer here, you know, but I'm not playing a sophisticated game as you are. I'm more like thinking about limit orders for that V piece, whenever that comes, you know, that deep V. So, you know, I can't argue. I can't really say anything opposite of what you're saying.
No.
Because I think that, you know, this consistently has been a point for probably the last year that we've talked about. And I think it's held. I think the investment thesis has held over that time. We're just waiting. I mean, even though it's gone up some, you know, that doesn't, it's gone down some, and that doesn't really change the point that you've been trying to make all along.
I mean, I did expect, you know, all, you know, no market goes straight down. I didn't expect it to run this high. I mean, I think 24, 25, 23, whatever number I had back then. But equally, you know, I have a very simple rule. The market hasn't bottomed until there's accumulation. So let it run. Don't really care. I also, again, just to be clear, it's, you know, and I think everybody needs to think like this. I'm okay to be wrong. Yeah, this is really important in trading, because it's not an exact science. I can, you know, look at the entrails of all the dead animals around and come to the view that, you know, we're going up or going down or whatever. Okay, but I have to be okay with being wrong. I'm okay with being wrong. I'm convinced we haven't seen the bottom of market. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Cool. You know, dust myself off and move on. But like other signs that are worrying are in shitcoin land. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So BNB, which is very interesting to me, because I didn't realize it could be used as collateral on Binance, and it can.
Yeah.
okay, which is frightening to me.
Yep.
Like genuinely frightening to me. And it's a highly, and again, you'll hear any trader in the weeds, it's a highly distorted bit of PA. So, you know, this did its run up and you can see it's being defended here at 220, yeah?
Right.
Okay, which is very similar to the FTT 22 price for me, okay? Every time it gets tested, for some reason, somebody prints a billion of TUSD, probably. Probably just a fucking coincidence.
Okay. I'm sure it is.
Wow, how surprising.
But I'm kind of think that we're going to, if this breaks down, which technically it should, okay, I mean, this should go down, and it should be coming down to, you know, $30.
Yeah, how long can you keep that up? Yeah.
Well, the question is, this is the real stress test of Binance, yeah? Because if they're playing games with their own exchange coin, which is only traded on their own exchange and volume, which is 90% owned by CZ, which you can use as collateral for other shit, if any of the theories about the reliance of BNB, then this is going to be a very interesting test if we drop below 220. So again, you know, wait and see. But as you can see, like, the problem with these things is that the defense gets weaker and weaker. So you have this classic, you know, defend it with lots of money, defend it with lots of money, defend, but nothing's going up. So I'm very curious to see. So I think BNB is in a bad spot. God bless Sol, it's showing some resilience. I mean, it's still fucked, but it's showing some resilience.
They're still fighting. They're still fighting.
I found out today that developers on Solana can actually delete contracts, which to me is just makes Solana even more of a shit. So anyway. Yeah.
But that's part of MiCA, right? Going forward, isn't MiCA allowing that or requiring that kind of stuff to modify smart contracts?
Oh, I have no idea. I think it's been a part of their chain from day one, is what I got the gist of.
No, I'm saying with the new EU regulatory thing, that it might be advantageous for European regulatory stuff being able to do that, because that's part of their things.
It might be, but it certainly doesn't make it better as a platform, right?
Hell no. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, 100.
Again, I don't care about it. I made a fuck ton. I'm happy.
We don't either.
Still don't know what it does, but as you can see, hit support, bounce. I think it dies. But actually, remarkably resilient compared to a lot of shitcoin land. Canso, you know, I kind of tagged the green area here. I mean, it's again, for people who don't like levels, you know, these are not levels. I think I made these levels way, way back, tested the upper level, testing the lower. Maybe we'll see some signs of life, but I'm just a bit worried about what will happen if the market, so you can see testing a level here. So I'm definitely still planning to pick some up, but I'm not rushing into it. I want to see what happens to this if Bitcoin fails. But, you know, this is not good. You should expect, if it doesn't bounce here, man, we got trouble. Yeah, I mean, look down. But again, just a coin I keep an eye on. And obviously then my favorite, which is Ethereum. That's Ethereum Bitcoin. And again, I'm just going to repeat this because, look, here's what happens to every single shitcoin ever, okay? And Ethereum is just being itself, which is after its first hit. So this is Ethereum Bitcoin, yeah? Okay. It never regains the high. So again, this is the idea that it bounces lower and lower and lower. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that this is cooked from a price action standpoint, because what you want to see, if you're bullish Ethereum, we would have wanted to see a higher price relative to Bitcoin. We haven't. Probably do a bounce here, but I do think it's screwed. I think that if you look at it from, you know, trend line point of view, it's very clear that the up only trend is lost. So all joking aside, I'm not planning to add Ethereum, and I kind of normally would buy a bit of Ethereum when I think the market's bottomed, but I'm definitely not. planning to buy Ethereum for the next cycle. I don't think it presents the risk reward, whatever my views of it and Vitalik are. It may have a potential bull case in the event that DEXs are the only place that people can trade. Even then, I'm not sure that the amount of liquidity would be there to make it worthwhile. So I do think it's in real trouble here from a price standpoint.
Sean, one thing you pointed out in the past, it was the first time, and I think it's that trend line you have going up at it, you know, left bottom left, top right, was that it had never crossed that moving average line or whatever line that is in history. And it, you know, you pointed that out a couple of months ago, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, that has really bad foreshadowing for what's coming next, right? When that happens in your mind?
Yeah, I think that again, as a technical trader, okay, this is bad because we had a breakdown, we had a retest, reject, and even though we bounce again, this is not to say Ethereum can't make a higher price in dollars, yeah.
Okay. So
Ethereum relative to Bitcoin. But what it is indicating to me is that Ethereum will underperform Bitcoin in the next cycle, as it underperformed Bitcoin in the last cycle. Yeah, so you go, the peak relative to Bitcoin was in 2017, okay? And as you can see, bounced lower in 2019, bounced lower in this kind of, you know, 2021, 22 bull run, yeah? That's just not a bullish sign at all. And you know, that's a longer-term bearish sign. You know, that's it. Again, there can be use cases that evolve, but I can't look at that. I can't predict that kind of stuff.
Are you thinking? Are you still?
The chart says it's in trouble relative to Bitcoin.
Is your green box on Ethereum still the 300 to 500 range?
Yeah. So then, if we look at Ethereum dollar, you know, yeah, I still see it there. I think when we break this horizontal line, I think we can get some. I expect it to nuke. You know, again, these are weekly candles, so you know, and I expect to pull back to in and around here. Absolutely. But where I was considering buying, when I look at it, but because here's the way I look at this. What I want to buy for the next bull run, and there will always be a next bull run, I don't know why, has to be in a position to substantially outperform Bitcoin for it to be worth the risk I take with my money.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. So I can look at something like Canto and I can say, yeah, that thing could do 100x or 1000x, could also go to zero. Okay. But the risk of zero versus the upside reward relative to Bitcoin doing a 20x means it's a small part of my stack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I look at Ethereum and I go, well, in my opinion, it will underperform Bitcoin in the next cycle as it did in the last cycle. Then there's no point in me holding it because I consider Bitcoin, you know, the safest asset. There's no point in me taking what I believe to be a higher risk for a lower reward. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, just to, for people to kind of summarize, from your perspective, the altcoins you're willing to play are the ones that can do, you think, potentially extreme high bounces compared to what Bitcoin is going to return to you of say 20x. Whereas if you were betting on say a Canto, you would be betting on 100x. So you'll put a small piece over there because you'll make that play. But because Ethereum has always or has repeatedly underperformed Bitcoin, it's not worth the risk for you.
No, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I think everybody accepts Bitcoin as the least risk asset in the space. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean, to be clear, that it's without risk, okay?
Right.
But what I have to do is I have to look at it and say, okay, so when I'm coming to accumulating stuff for the next bull run, okay, you know, I'm always in Bitcoin. I expect 20, 30x off it, you know, whatever, okay? So I have to look at something and going, okay, you need to do a multiple of that to compensate me for the increased risk of not just being Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my charts tell me, and they could be wrong, but my charts tell me that Ethereum will underperform Bitcoin. So why would I take the additional risk and make less money?
Yeah, totally makes sense. Niblet says, never is an incredibly short time in crypto. Are there other asset pairs with real history that demonstrate the proposed ETH-BTC patterns?
Oh, yeah. Every single shitcoin with the exception of BNB. No, I'm quite serious about that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, BNB is the only one, suspiciously, or you can look at that, or maybe I should just fucking all in on BNB. Obviously, I won't. But yeah, like this, again, people fall in love with their coins, and there's nothing against that. I was in love with Monero and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but the point about them is that you need to come, and I could have bought them and I could have made dollars, but the point is I'm going, look, I have to look at this from a risk-adjusted return. And if I looked at Monero last cycle, I'd say, well, it's underperforming, okay? So I'm going to make less than just sitting in the premier asset, the safest asset, Bitcoin. So why would I increase my risk for a lower return?
Sure.
So when I look at the shitcoin space, I have to look at things that are offering me, you know, 100x, you know, which isn't it crazy to say in this world? The potential for 100x, even for me to consider them.
How, I mean, I know you have to analyze this and you can't say unequivocally, but for you going into kind of looking at buying the ones you think can do 100x, how many assets would you look at for yourself in terms of your portfolio relative to
I mean, last cycle I only held one, which was Sol.
Okay.
You know, which did do 100x, and that was cool. This cycle, I'm just going to wait and see what develops. I mean, Kanto, I have a soft spot for. Blame you, Brad.
Good.
Or thank you if you're right.
Just don't blame me if I'm wrong. If it's wrong.
And I've invested some. I like the chart, as I said. I like the way it's controlled. I'm about to find whether I really like the chart fairly soon. And then I'll just, what narrative? There'll be some AI narrative or some, I don't know, some narrative will develop. I'll probably buy one or two. I don't really, you see, here's the thing. A lot of people think they, in my opinion, think they de-risk by holding, you know, 20 coins, yeah?
Right.
And I'm like, no, that's not de-risking. Okay? You know, that's not a portfolio. Okay, a portfolio is where you hold gold and crypto or fucking long bonds and crypto. Right. Okay, when you're holding, you know, 30, that's not diversification. That's literally concentration.
Makes sense, right? Because ultimately, they're probably all going to do about the same thing. Shizzy asks, are you taking into account the amount of deflation that is going on in Ethereum?
I think it's irrelevant because, again, you know, this is the supply demand. Well, first of all, you know, I'm going to say this is you've got rehypothecation built in. Okay. So anything that's rehypothecated, okay, doesn't have a supply problem. Yeah. So it doesn't have a deflation problem. So liquid staking is literally rehypothecation. Yeah. So what fucking deflation is what I would say to that. Okay. And secondly, you know, I could very well be wrong about Ethereum, but I just have to look at this from the point of view of going, it's printing, you know, a very well-known lower high. You can Google it, chart pattern over the course of its life relative to Bitcoin. And I can put my money somewhere more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that strategy. Niblet says Forex provides hundreds of pairs and generations of history. Do we see similar patterns in trading pairs outside of crypto?
Yeah, I mean, all of this TA is developed over price history. Yeah, so the lower high hypothesis is a very, you know, well known TA. And again, just Google the TA of this. I mean, I'm sure that Zimbabwe dollar has done this as well. Yeah.
Yep.
But this is a very different space. In my opinion, because what we have is the history of however many thousands of, you know, altcoins have been made over the years, is that I think there may be one or two other exceptions, but the only kind of interesting exception to this rule has been BNB, and Ethereum hasn't been exceptional to this rule.
Right. Grandpa Michael says, when I make it big, I'm going to get into a nice house in the Villages next to Brad and Joe. They won't take there you me go. There. They won't take me there, man. They will not accept me there. They'll look at my Twitter feed and say, no, no, can't have him. Not
wait, wait, what's the Villages? Is that the Disney one?
No, no. The Villages is up in North Florida, the senior retirement community, where there is a high concentration of Trump supporters.
So seniors.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at Michael there. I mean, aren't you guys, isn't that a big retirement community down there? It looks like it would suit him.
Yeah, well, you know,
Miami's
a little younger. He could go do the tango with the old ladies or whatever.
There you
whatever.
Go. I think Michael fit right in. I think he'll be good.
Yeah, no, but we live in the area where we're walking through like throngs of hot South American women and gay dudes and, you know, noxious plumes of marijuana smoke everywhere. We're not really up in the north part of Florida.
Yeah, the north is retiree country. North and West Coast. Nibble says, by the way, I agree completely with the risk. This risk strategy. It's why double-digit DeFi APYs compared with single-digit bond / savings / term deposits at single digits.
Yeah, I think everybody, when you're looking at it next year, I mean, or whenever the bull this year, whenever you think a bull is going to start, I mean, that's not for me to say. I can just give my opinions, but I think it is a very good point of view to always look at risk-adjusted return. Okay, whether that's APYs. I mean, my argument about these DeFi protocols that give you, you know, a trillion percent, you know, APYs is it's very difficult to understand the risk you're taking.
Yeah.
So in other words, you know, I can look at the reward side and calculate it out, but how do you assess the risk side of some of these things? Yeah.
Sure.
So when I come to buying spot Bitcoin, okay, the risk side is very apparent. Yeah, I mean it's zero, as I suppose it is on the other things.
More coffee.
Jesus, my comment was complete gibberish. it's only
9:53 there where he is. So
you know. I don't believe I've ever seen Niblets make complete gibberish comment.
Yeah, I don't see it either, man.
Other than eth is oil, you know.
He's our resident oil and gas expert. Yeah.
The ongoing oil analogy in our Telegram spaces that he seems to just want to keep bringing it up with you, Sean. It cracks me up.
No, I really enjoy it. It's classic Bitcoin baiting, you know, which is Bitcoin gold. Which I don't agree with, and eth is oil. And I go, look, eth is very similar to oil. Yeah, it'll burn very fast, and you'll end up. I mean, if we want to play the analogy game, yeah, you know, you'll get very hot.
That's hilarious.
But you could also just take your money, burn it, and get the same amount of heat. I'm telling you.
There you go. That's fantastic, Sean, as usual. Anything else you want to drop on us before we roll out of here?
No, that was kind of it. Again, I just wanted to go through, and again, I'm not, you know, I do think that you know, ultimately when you're thinking, I'm just concerned about, again, you know, I fucking hate shilling narratives. Yeah, so
yeah,
not really as anti-shitcoin as I may come across. I just hate bullshit narratives. And so, again, I'm just cautioning people on the, you know, the halfening story, saying, yes, we have a cycle story. Okay, it's almost certainly nothing to do with the halfening anymore. And maybe if you're looking at, rather than fixing the day that, you know, we go to 450 coins a day, maybe just dig a bit deeper and, you know, again, form a view on credit cycles and so on, and hopefully that will help a little bit and so on. And again, look, I could be completely fucking wrong in all of this. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And that has to be accepted as well. And that's it. Yeah, I just fucking hate shilling it. Fucking BRC20s and all of this nonsense that's going on. I'm not saying that to upset Chizzy or anybody. I'm just going, like, it's fucking shill land. Yeah. I mean, no, I'm not saying these things don't have a use, but please peel away the shilling and tell me what the facts are. Yeah.
Sure. Niblet said ETH is hemp oil. Fantastic as always, Sean. Thank you for the education. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom and experience. It's always valuable to everyone here. For those of you that are really into the halving stuff, there, I was going to bring him up today, but he was an island. It was not him personally, but bring up his charts. There's a guy called The Rational Root on Twitter who actually has a business of making charts around the halving. And
some of his charts, his circular charts, are genius.
Yeah, they really are pretty cool. Yeah. They are pretty cool. But at the end of the day, if everything's based on that, what do you got? So, yeah.
No. I wouldn't argue. I think, you know, again, The Rational Root is a really good follow, really good listen. He's very analytical. I think he's wrong that it's the halving. But I think, and he himself actually does point out that the cycle is adjusting in time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I found him on What Bitcoin Did, Peter McCormick's show, and he does a really good job of presenting the data. So, excellent.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I'm going to see you guys. Every morning I'm going to post whatever shit music I'm listening to in there as well. So
nice.
Ruin your day by listening to it.
Nah, it was great, man. You just keep prodding me into remembering things that I've forgotten I listened to, which is fantastic. I love it. So, no.
I must have early onset Alzheimer's or something because I wake up and I go, fuck it, I must listen to The Verve or something. And nobody's posted Oasis. What is wrong with you people?
Yeah, I can't
go Oasis. There.
I can't go there. I can't go there. But I'll let you do that. That's all good. Thanks so much, everybody. Thank you, Niblets, Shizzy, Michael, everybody that participated today. We appreciate you being here. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please rate and review us. Give us a little boost in the algo. Same on YouTube. Please leave a comment and smash the thumbs up. And if you're subscribing to us, make sure you click the little bell so you actually hear about when we launch a new episode. We'll be back on Monday. Sean, as always, thank you very much. I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. Join our community at t.me/missiondefi, t.me/missiondefi. Everything from old man's music to young man's music and Bitcoin theories and Ethereum theories and ordinals and NFTs getting
airdrops there.
Airdrops, absolutely. El Hombre is constantly posting new stuff in there. So you're missing out if you're not there. Join us, t.me/missiondefi. Joe, thank you very much. Sean, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. Thanks, Brad. See you later.
Take care. Bye-bye. Guys. Bye-bye.